Welcome to the Outdoor Citizen Podcast. Thanks for joining us. Our guests today include DJ Salazar from the Valley Veterans Recreation, Esteban Salazar from SLV Great Outdoors, and Mick Daniel from San Luis Valley Great Outdoors. We're going to start with DJ and Esteban, and we want to thank our musician Don Richmond and Daniel Boyce for the bird songs that you're going to hear. DJ and Esteban, thank you for joining us this afternoon. Welcome to the Outdoor Citizen Podcast. And please tell us what's going on with Valley Veterans Recreation.
Thank you. Thank you for having us. Well, we're starting off this year, getting started with our socials. We're starting off in January with our ice fishing socials for veterans. Our current dates are looking at January 27th, February 10th, and February 24th. Our goal is just to get veterans out there to come and socialize, you know, something to do during the winter. We fully intend on having a gear locker there for ice fishing poles, jigs, things of that nature, so everybody can get out there and ice fishing.
And hopefully by that time, we will have had enough cold days that the lakes are actually going to be frozen up, so it's safe to be out on the ice.
Yeah, there was quite a big group out there this weekend on about 3.5 inches of ice, but I'm pretty confident at the by January it should be pretty well frozen over.
Just don't drive your truck out there.
Oh, good, please, no. No more Smith incidents and dropping a Suburban.
No, that would not be good. So where are these social ice fishing events going to take place?
As of right now, we're looking at January 27th at Mountain Home, February 10th at Mountain Home, and to be announced for February 24th, we're looking at being able to make our way down to the west side of the valley and utilize some lakes down there.
Oh, good.
So still in the middle of getting that situated. I got a few more phone calls to make, but crossing our fingers, we'll be able to be ice fishing down there by the end of the month.
Well, I tell you, the recent reports I've gotten from Mountain Home, you're going to have a pretty good-sized auger to get some of those fish out.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Me and one of the board members were out getting some footage for our ice fishing tournament coming up, and that's another thing I'd like to touch on. We're out there videoing, and a couple of our buddies were pulling out some really big fish, and I pulled out a pretty decent one. So, yeah, it's gonna be interesting. A lot of fun out there. It was the same last year. You know, the fishing was really hot, and there was some really big fish getting pulled out of there. So, looking forward to seeing people's faces when they pull out something that. You know. Yeah.
And Esteban, do you guys have some ice fishing trips scheduled also?
Yeah. The things that I want to talk to today about, Marty, is just kind of a recap and some of our successes in our outdoor programming. So this year we've had a number of different programming options, including mountain biking, community walks, and some very, very successful community meetings. And this has been made all possible through a very generous Colorado Health Foundation grant. We are in year three of that grant, and DJ, who's joining us today, he's been very instrumental in making all of the programming possible. We have a program called Outdoor Ambassadors or Embajadores, and that work really evolved into mountain biking and fishing programming for the community. To note, with the approaching of January, we're looking at January 6th at Mountain Home Reservoir. And then we're looking at January 20th at Smith Reservoir. There'll be door prizes. This is a family-friendly and kid-friendly event open to the general public. And we're just hoping to give the community opportunity to come on out, introduce them to the sport of ice fishing, hopefully get some interest of some young anglers who might take up the sport later on in life. We definitely understand some of the limitations to recreating in the winter are, you know, the extreme temperatures and lack of experience, and also some of these outdoor activities are very cost prohibitive. You need a bit of a financial investment to get started, so things like fishing poles and augers and if you're wanting to be stay a bit more comfortable on the ice, things like ice shelters, you know, that can add up rather quickly. So what we're hoping to accomplish in these events is give families and individuals a chance to explore the sport, perhaps catch some fish. DJ's got some great equipment that he brings out. He's got a fiber optic camera that he drops into the hole, and we're able to put that down and have a look and see what the fish are up to, if they happen to swim by or if what they're biting on. So it's just a great opportunity to learn more about the sport, and hopefully, these individuals, these families will carry on, you know, after trying it out. We accommodate them, we provide the gear. We definitely go over CPW regulations in terms of license requirements. And it's just an opportunity to, you know, get out and talk, get active, get in the sun during the winter months when we know it's a lot more challenging to be active outdoors. So that's really what we're going for.
Yeah, make a little vitamin D, get out in the sun in the wintertime. But you have to remember to wear that sunscreen also. Mm-hmm. Making vitamin D is good. Getting a burn is not.
That's right.
And sunglasses.
And yeah, you don't want a retinal burn, that's for sure.
Definitely. Oof. And we have two ice fishing shelters that we make available to everybody who shows up to our socials. We have a 12-man hut and a 6-man hut. So definitely accommodate to different, how you like the weather, I guess you'd say.
Sure. That's great.
Yeah, and it's you know, they're really well made. They're, you know, very much like a tent structure, but they've got some really good insulation, and you'd be surprised how warm you can stay on the ice. It's rather enjoyable, especially that shelter really cuts the wind. I think that's probably one of the worst things out there.
Yeah, that's for sure. I've been out on the ice in the wind with nothing more than a jacket, and you really have to make sure you turn your body so that you're not facing into the wind. Otherwise, it's almost unbearable.
That's right.
Or you just strap on a pair of cross-country skis and go skiing around to build up some heat so you're not just stationary.
Right.
No doubt.
So how can people get in touch with you guys if they want to participate?
We're going to be doing, in addition to the podcast here today, we're going to be, we've got some posters out on a lot of public spaces. Also, look for the promotion on Facebook. You can reach me at Estevan at SLVGO, that's Estebean at SLVGO.com. And if you need any details about what this might involve or maybe appropriate gear, you can also reach me by phone at 719-580-9532.
Yeah, and on both of our social medias, I'll be posting a video of recommended gear. For the Veterans Ice Fishing socials, we'll be posting flyers out, and we can be found on Instagram and Facebook under Valley Veterans Recreation and YouTube. So,
okay, and is there, I'm sure you'll have press releases for the radio stations and
definitely,
and newspapers, and certainly Alamosa Citizen.
Definitely, and I want to bring up as well Valley Veterans Recreation. We're hosting an ice fishing tournament January 13th at Mountain Home. So definitely it's going to be a little fundraising event for us, you know, get people involved. It's everybody's welcome. So looking forward to that, getting a few people out there so we can continue the work that we're doing with veterans.
And what time will that be?
Check-in will start at 6:30. The tournament will start at 7:30, and then it'll go through noon. We're getting a various array of prizes that we're going to be giving out, and then two different categories, one for trout, one for pike. So there'll be plenty of chances to win, and then we're doing a raffle that is brought to you by the American Legion in San Luis, Post 142.
Oh, so, nice.
Yeah, so it's really great. So family fun event. Looking forward to seeing people get out there.
Excellent. All right. Anything else that that you guys want to mention while we're here?
No, I think we just wanted to reach out to the community and share some of our exciting programming coming up for the winter months. And we want to thank you for having us here today.
Well, it's great speaking with you. Thanks. And we look forward to hearing more and seeing some good photos from the ice fishing tournaments and social events.
Awesome.
Excellent. Thank you guys.
Thank you.
All right, folks. We have now our second guest for the Outdoor Citizen podcast, Mick Daniel, the Executive Director of San Luis Valley Great Outdoors, SLV Go. Welcome, Mick, and thanks for joining us today.
Thanks, Marty, for having us. Excited to be here.
Yeah, we're pleased to have you here. So catch us up on the last year of SLV Go.
Oh, no, I don't even know where to start. It's been a year.
Wherever you want to start is fine.
Well, I think the good news is that SLV Go has continued to grow over the last, really, and this is our 10th year kind of celebrating as a coalition. So, you know, and we've ventured into some new projects this year that have been both challenging and good for us, I think, in the long run, you know, but we've kind of kept going with a lot of our original projects too. And I'm not going to, you know, Esteban was just here a minute ago, and I believe this is all getting broadcast on the same one. So I won't reiterate, but the Embajadores have had a great year. This is the first time that SLV Go itself has had a programming entity. Really before that, we were just supporting other organizations that programmed. But with the Embajadores, we've really been able to do that. And those numbers have been outstanding. Like the community has really responded well. Both to the walks and to the bike rides and the ice fishing has been outstanding. Like we've, you know, at times had 100 people out on the ice all getting experience that for the first time. So that's really exciting. As some of you all have probably heard about the Heart of the Valley project.
Yes, great.
It's our concept of like connecting our local communities to each other, but also to public land and kind of looking at that in a large scale way of the San Luis Valley. You know, I don't have any big news, anything specifically. I mean, we're still very hopeful that we'll get to work with Solovive on some of the rail corridor. And there are some indications that he is willing to work with us. And so we're excited about that. He's not an easy person to have an opportunity to get to sit down with. So we're hoping here early in the next year that we'll, you know, have maybe some more news and more things to talk about with that. But you know, it was never intended to just be focused on the rail corridor. There are some places where the rail corridor makes perfect sense, and there are other places where, you know, we may have some other opportunities. You know, for instance, looking at the connection between Great Sand Dunes National Park, Alamosa, along the Clovis Basin Canal. And again, none of this is like written in stone or definitely happening. These are just things that we're actively looking at and in conversations about and hoping that we find a way to make some of that happen.
Yeah, it's still early in the project's life.
Yeah, exactly. And these, when you're looking at these, you know, it's one thing to build a trail in a community that's owned by you know, the city of Alamosa or Alamosa County or the BLM or the Forest Service. It's another thing when we start looking at multiple jurisdictions and long property, many property owners in between.
Right. Private land is more difficult to address.
And then the other thing, you know, that we don't always consider is that in a lot of these routes, there are a ton of utilities in existence in the corridor. So they're buried a lot of times, whether those are power lines or gas lines or fiber optics. And my understanding or our understanding at this point is that, you know, when we start talking about trail infrastructure in those corridors, like those utilities have to be moved. So very expensive, right, when we start getting into those pieces. So, but this is all coming. This is why we got money to do the planning, right? So we knew these things before we launched into bigger fundraising campaigns and bigger plans. But still very exciting. I feel like we've made good progress. We've had a lot of conversations with CDOT. Some with Xcel Energy, a few with the railroad, certainly a lot of communication with our communities that are involved more immediately. And, you know, we're working with the counties too and the regional transportation planning board as well, which makes up many of our county commissioners here. And so all exciting things happening. You know, the process is moving. We'd love to have a demonstration project, you know, here in the next year to 2 years that we're raising funds for. That's kind of the goal.
That's actually pretty quick.
Yeah. Well, we try.
that's great. But that'll still be during my lifetime, I hope.
Well, hopefully that's the case, you know. And it's funny how with these big projects, like things come up that we weren't expecting, like a community, you know, as a for instance, may be interested in supporting the trail through their community, but they may have another priority that we need to focus on them with them first before we focus on that one. And so, for instance, in that is the Highway 160 bridge. Like, we kind of need to figure that out for pedestrians sooner than later. And so sometimes we hit pause thinking about the bigger picture in order to focus on something really specific for a community that, that just needs to happen. You know, I think when we, Generation Wild's been a huge part of San Luis Valley Go really since the day I walked into the office. That back then it was called Rio Inspire, but, you know, we've grown since. You know, I think at that point they funded three of our communities, Sawatch, Creed, and Antonito. And now, at this point, we're actually 12 different organizations. Still strong connection with the Conejo School District in Antonito. Creed is still on board. Alpine Achievers, which has spread their mission throughout the whole San Luis Valley. I'm going to try hard not to miss a partner here, but there's 12, so it's a lot. The Boys and Girls Club, of course, is a very strong partner in Gen Wild. RigWiki, Rio Grande.
Water Conservation Education Initiative.
Thank you. Many others. But, you know, we were fortunate to get some gap year funding from GOCO to ensure unbroken programming through next year. And next year really starts the next opportunity for us to, like, go back to GOCO with a ask. And these asks are not light. Like, they're generally have been somewhere between $1 million and $2 million. But the number of kids that are getting outside because of that program is just astounding. I get weak in the knees thinking about it. And, you know, if you have the chance to go to our YouTube page, or visit any of our partners' page, you should be able to learn more about that. But we firmly believe that kids grow better outside, and we want to give them as many opportunities as we can to make that happen.
And I think you're collaborating with Adam Steed as well.
That's correct. Adventure Programs is part of that, and Will is the new hire there. He was just on your podcast last time.
He had really good things to say about Gen Wild.
Awesome. Yeah. And I think that's true. I, to be honest, like, with that kind of money, it's really helping fund many of those programs. Not entirely. Like, everybody has to go out and get some more money. But when we can get kids out in that way and make that meaningful change, it's really amazing. And some of those programs are growing. Like, RigWiki is now doing 2 summer camps in the summer instead of just 1, which is outstanding. Friday programming, of course, has been a big part of the Alamosa community since they went to the 4-day school week, and the Alamosa School District funded a good portion of that. And many of those partners, I think 8 of the partners, have been providing Friday programming throughout this fall, and it's going well. You know, like, I think anytime a school district makes that change, it's kind of interesting to see, but we definitely have kids engaged and doing things outdoors. And of course, as winter comes, we'll see how that plays out. But we're hoping that over time that we extend into skiing and snowboarding programs and things like that as well. But that's a huge, exciting thing. I think working with the Southwest Conservation Corps, we're going to have a youth advisory council. This has been a concept that we've talked about for a long time in Gen Wild, but really just starting to come to fruition as we've kind of stabilized, I guess, is a good way to think about it, and we've not had to panic about funding every year. Now we can really begin to, like, figure out how to help the youth influence the future direction, and this will be really important as we move into this next grant cycle, which will be a big part of the Gen Wild year next year, is kind of strategic planning for that.
Very good.
Our Great Outdoors Action Team, which we formerly call the GOATs.
The GOATs.
Right? Love them. I can't brag on this team enough, you know, like, we've had a few iterations of it now, but to be honest, we still have our core members that started with us back in COVID in 2020. Jimmy and Logan have really held that up, and Logan, you know, Logan Hemsdale graduated from Adams State, and he has just been, he's been stuck with us through thick and thin through the last year with one of our projects that I'll talk about here at the end, Tin Can Camp. Really has been the mastermind behind that. And then Jimmy, he's a ski patroller at Wolf Creek, but comes on and works for us starting in April. And he's just really been an outstanding crew leader too. And we've had to split these two up most of the year just because we had Tin Can Camp
so
moving.
Many projects, yeah. Right.
We've had Tin Can Camp moving simultaneously with trail projects that we were funded to do. We made a decision to go with a smaller team this year, and I was really worried about that. But the success, the proof is in the pudding. Like, you hire good people who are really committed to the work and excited about being outdoors and making things better for the people who live in their valley, and it really pays off. I think the big news for 2024 is that we are actually moving into off-highway vehicle maintenance, OHV maintenance. It's supportive by the BLM, so the BLM's the grant, or got the grant, and they're going to hire the Great Outdoors Action Team to, like, do maintenance on these trails and kind of get them up to speed. One of the things that happened, especially with the beetle kill, but across the valley, is that there hasn't been a lot of tread work done on those trails. A lot of times, especially on the Forest Service, we're trying to work with them in 2025, but they have to do so much tree cutting that they don't actually have time to do tread maintenance, or they're really stretched to do the tread maintenance. But we've seen the same thing on the BLM. So we're moving into that tread maintenance, and just what that means is that those multi-use trails that, you know, motorcycles use and mountain bikes use and people hike and horses are on are just going to have better tread coming in the future. And that's huge. I will also say that, because there is no, you know, with the motorized, grants, all motorized users who are using public lands buy a tag in Colorado. It's $25 tag, and that goes on their vehicle, whether it's their side by side or their motorcycle or the ATV or whatever it may be. And all that goes back into trail maintenance. It's really an amazing program. And I think there's been multiple opportunities, or I know there's been multiple opportunities for the non-motorized side to really consider this as well. And it's kind of been not favorable, but, you know, I'm a big fan of these things where, hey, we buy a tag to put on our mountain bike, and then that goes to support non-motorized trails. And we need to start thinking about something like that, because, quite frankly, I mean, motorized has three times the money for maintenance than non-motorized. And so we'll start seeing this lag over time. If we don't start thinking about that as a group of users on the state level, that's just a really important thing. And the feds, you know, they've been fortunate with some of this money, COVID money that's coming through, like we're starting to see some things happen on the BLM and the Forest Service that have been delayed, but it's not going to be there forever. And so we have to start thinking about ways that we can take care of trails. Of course, one of those ways is giving to SLV Go.
There you go. Yeah.
It's Colorado Gives Day. Even though this is coming out afterwards, I'd be, you know, hard not to mention it, but we certainly appreciate support for trail work, or any of our programs really, but it's so important, you know, and it helps us match some of these bigger grants that we're able to get, and match is always an issue.
Oh yeah, it is for almost any nonprofit. You have to have a match of some sort.
Yeah. Other big things, these were federal contracts that we worked on, but, you know, I think a lot of people don't know, but our Great Outdoors Action Team is not just a trails team. We generally refer to them as stewardship team. And so we've actually worked on multiple Forest Service campgrounds this year, Tucker Ponds in Magote as well. That was our fall work. We're putting in new campfire pad, or new camping pads, new campfire rings. I think we even did some volleyball courts and a lot of fencing and a lot of putting up new signage. And so when you see work on public land, infrastructure work that improves recreation, it's not always the Great Outdoors Action Team. There's other contractors and stuff working on that, but we're certainly engaged in working on a much larger picture. We even have worked on private campgrounds this year. We worked with Ramble to get them kind of in their final stages of opening. So the team is very flexible. I mean, we have equipment, you know, we have mini excavators and skid steers and trailers and trucks and tract haulers and you name it. And so they're not just a hand team, and they're almost all, well, they all have to be adults because of the type of equipment we're running.
Right, right.
You know, so our team runs anywhere between 23 years old all the way to 61, I think, right now. So a wide age range of team members on that. We did complete a new trail this year. It's actually up in Crestone. It's the Baca Nature and Heritage Trail. It's connecting the kiosk in Crestone there at County Road T, all the way to the visitor center and the Baca Refuge. So it's a brand new trail. We've been working on a trail plan in Crestone for a number of years now. There's also a trail that connects from the kiosk to the charter school. And then, keeping our fingers crossed, we've had a grant for a number of years, a Safe Routes to School grant, to put a segment of trail in that connects the Camita Baca Grande subdivision to the school.
Oh, that would be excellent.
And SOVGO, that's pavement project, so we're not doing that work, but we were engaged in the fundraising. We've been engaged in trying to help the project move forward. And as the recession and post-COVID prices hit, of course, the price it went up in cost, and that's delayed the project as we've tried to figure out and scale the project down. But it's really hard to scale a pavement project down. It's really challenging. But that's kind of the Great Outdoors Action Team. You know, it's been a... It's just been an outstanding year. That's been one of our favorite programs to see grow and develop over the last, since 2020. We started it in COVID. It's still hard to believe that we actually got to do projects in COVID, but we did. And so because of that, too, we also got to pick from an outstanding group of people because a lot of other people weren't hiring. You know, on our conservation side, you know, I think, you know, we started really this work with Colorado Parks and Wildlife and the Regional Partnership Initiative really in 2021 is when we first got involved. But, you know, early on when I came on to SOVGO and we started looking at new trails and these projects with GOCO, you know, the one thing that kept showing up over and over again was, you know, what are you doing about wildlife? Like, how are you mitigating effects of recreation on wildlife? And, you know, in that, the land conservation conversation always was coming up too, right? Like, if we're putting trails here, like, what other corridors are we preserving, you know, to make sure that, you know, wildlife can coexist on this landscape with us? And the San Luis Valley's interesting, right? Like, CPW's owns the wildlife technically, right? Which is why they sell the tags. And so they're responsible when the wildlife's, like, in the farmers' fields. And...
eating the haystacks.
And so it's a really complicated scenario. So, you know, we've had to move them out of places in the valley to protect ag. And so then that puts them a lot of times in places where we're now recreating. And recreation has expanded, right? And when SOVGO first started, we were just focused on recreation. That was kind of our main mission. But like I said, as we got into this, we realized really quickly that, like, this can't exist unto itself. Like, we have to be thinking about the larger picture of the San Luis Valley here. And so that is what the regional partnership is designed to do, is kind of have these conservation and recreation imbalance pieces. And it's one of our, you know, one of our bigger funding areas right now. And so we're in those conversations. And I bring that up just because we're usually the fourth Thursday of the month, 3:00. It's an open table. Everyone's welcome to attend. We need community input. We want community input. We want to hear from motorized. We want to hear from hunters and fishermen. We want to hear from mountain bikers and hikers and equestrian users and everybody, just so that we're having this conversation about what this looks like. You know, we're in a mapping phase right now where we're pulling data from many of our state partners, but also our federal partners, to put kind of in a comprehensive overlay of the San Luis Valley. So we understand, you know, critical habitat. We understand where people are currently recreating. We're overlapping those things and really begin to get a picture of the valley. You know, one of the goals that I think about often is that, you know, I feel like from a user standpoint and a hunter standpoint as well, I kind of know where these activities are happening, you know, but me knowing it or Marty knowing it doesn't mean that everyone knows it. So trying to get to that tool where we can have these conversations so that people understand, you know, and I think the unique thing about the San Luis Valley, what I've seen from other regional partnership initiatives, is that, like, the folks I mountain bike with are also hunters and fishermen, and many of them ride motorcycles too. Because of that, we have these multiple, it's not just like one user group against the next, you know, we're actually well
integrated.
Yeah. And, you know, and I think about the Boot Hill Motorcycle Club and the Hattons, Dan and Marvin Hatton, and I know they have hunted their whole lives here. They've mountain biked their whole lives here. They've ridden motorcycles their whole lives here. I can't think of two guys that probably know the San Luis Valley any better, just in exploration. And I know they get it, you know, and I've seen Dan post himself, you know, like, when hunting season comes, hey, like, let's give some room for the hunters. They get 1 week, you know, to hunt, And we pretty much have the rest of the summer to ride. And I think that's a fair, thing. Like, we don't always consider that where the other user is coming from, and that's where user conflict comes from. And to be honest, I haven't seen a whole lot of that in the San Luis Valley. But as things grow, as things progress, we just need to keep that in mind. But that is the Regional Partnership Initiative. It's not a project that's like we're going to have some kind of final piece on, you know, this ever evolving, ever growing, always needing feedback. We want to make our rec areas that we're using better, you know, and you're starting to see some of that with the BLM in particular. Like, they have a bunch of boulders out in Limekiln. The signage is getting better, labeling the trails. The closures are getting better. They're supposed to be closed. You know, there'll be some tension there, of course, because, you know, as humans, we get so used to having access to something, and suddenly it's closed. It doesn't seem right. And that's true for me, too. I'm no different. And we got, you know, it messes with our mind a little bit when we see a closure for the first time. But bear with the BLM. I mean, I think things are going in the right direction. And with those other closures, I think we'll also see better trails, right? We'll be able to concentrate more effort in legal trails and not having to deal with the illegal ones. But that's the Regional Partnership Initiative. You know, we have really enjoyed through the last year seeing the growing support for the Dark Sky Reserve. And, you know, I think we live in such a cool place. Like, and I've said this many times before, but, you know, when I first moved to the Valley, like, there was a National Geographic article about the Valley, like National Geographic Traveler or something, and it talked about Highway 17. And, like, as you come south on 17, you can see the curvature of the earth. It, like, right past Joyful Journey is, like, the light's right and everything. You can literally see the curvature. And there are these places in the Valley, especially on the Sangre de Cristo side, when you're looking out over, it's like you're standing on the edge of the universe at night.
Yeah. You
know? And it's just, we've got to protect that, you know? Look, you know, population's growing, we think, right? There are some indications that it's declining as well. But there are more people moving in the Valley, and with that, you know, different thoughts on lights are coming in. And, you know, if we can work with our communities right now to protect this night sky, which is critical not only for our enjoyment as humans and our sense of wonder and adventure and travel, right, potential space travel in the future, but also, I mean, the migrating birds, elk migration paths, everything's really affected by these dark skies and the lights that are coming in, and the data is coming in very clear. Like, this is the time we have to think about it and protect it. And we're, you know, Danny Robin, I mean, she has been on the verge of, like, really making this happen, for a number of years now. Her expertise has increased, and because of that, you know, she's now serving on the Colorado State Dark Sky Board, and people are calling her about this information. So, you know, she's really become an expert in moving this forward, which is really exciting to see. And I should wrap it up, but I do want to mention, so I threw it out there right before about
Tin Can Camp.
Yep. So we have these five micro cabins. They're setting just outside of Penitente Canyon with direct trail access into Penitente. And this was, you know, it's funny, like, when you, you know, nonprofit people like to criticize nonprofits, you know, and, you know, they want you to run it more like a business. But, you know, when you run it more like a business, then they're like, well, why are you doing that? You should just be asking for funding, and you shouldn't be competing with other businesses or this or that. And it's always,
almost a no win.
You can never win, you know, but what we did need is a source of funding that, you know, could go for our communities for these bigger matches, right? Like, when we start getting into funding, we think about, like, some of the large funding, like, a lot of it's one-to-one matches. And so we were looking for an opportunity that could be, and we think that's Tin Can Camp. And so it's these five micro cabins. They are small. Like, they can technically sleep four, because we have two bedroom lofts on the top. But you wouldn't want to move around in there with four people. You know, these are cabins that were really made to inspire people to be outside. Right. They are modern. They have solar panels and LED lighting throughout, and two burner stovetop and heater, and also an incinerating toilet that makes the waste go poo. It just kind of burns up. Not while you're using it or anything. It's in a separate chamber.
But yeah, good. So there's no flames.
There's no flames at or your anything. Butt. Yeah. And good. If you open it, it shuts down, you know, and you can do your business and close the top. It starts again. But, you know, you got to bring your own water in. So there's no water on the hill. You know, we wanted to do a water import scenario. So users coming into the valley have to bring their own water to use it. But, you know, the idea is that, you know, people can rent these cabins. They have access to Penitente. They have access to Hell's Gate and all the areas up uphill from there.
Carnero Creek.
It's on the Continental Divide mountain bike route and motorcycle route. You know, we think this is going to be a slam dunk for us. We had some setbacks. You know, we weren't expecting to be 9 months out from when we thought we would open. But, you know, to be honest, we've worked through almost all of those with county regs and state regs. And, we're getting to that place. We're really hoping to, we will be open in January. And these will be fully operational and, you know, and they're four season. So you can camp there in the winter.
Is there heat in the cabin?
There is. Yep. Propane heat, propane furnace.
Nice.
And like I said, they're small, so they heat up really fast. And you have a pretty comfortable space to live and a pretty comfortable place to go play, you know? So we're hoping to pull on the climbers and the mountain bikers who come visit. And there's quite the winter climbing scene in Penitente. Many people say it's the best climbing of the year because that cliff face is south facing. Yeah. And so we're really hoping that pulls on it and is a successful project for us. We're going to use the hip camp system. And so it's a better fit for us than, say, Airbnb or VRBO is. But, you know, we'll have that more information going out about that as we move in. And like I said, everything that we pull in from that project's going right back to trails and conservation work and recreation work here in the San Luis Valley. And it'll affect many of our communities because, you know, when a community doesn't have match for a project, that's where that'll go. It'll go right back into it. And, of course, supporting our GOATS team.
Will you have a link on the SLV Go webpage for the hip camp?
Yep, absolutely. We'll have it'll have its own social media presence. So we'll have a Tin Can Camp Instagram account. I don't have that right in front of me right now, but I believe it's in existence, and probably a Facebook page too. And so we'll be pushing through those as well. And then of course there'll be information on site too. They're kind of tucked away in a place where you might not notice them unless you're really looking. But if you're on the trails, you'll see them. And so there'll be information there about it too. So you can potentially book about it. But we think, you know, when we set out to do this, like we were watching other, campgrounds develop around the San Luis Valley. I should mention that, you know, we did win an award for this project too, and our work with the State Land Trust. And so it's kind of innovative. Like it's a piece of state land, you know, that's set into trust for schools, and they can make money on it. They usually do that by mining and with this piece of land, cattle grazing too. Cattle grazing is part of this landscape as well, and those permits, and they were seeing use on their land that technically wasn't legal. Like it's not Colorado State Land Trust land is technically private land, even though it's owned by the state because the state is using that for revenue. And so these access issues were starting to crop up a little bit in that area, especially during COVID. And we had this great conversation with them, and they wanted to work with us on this project. So I'm really hoping that this leads to other projects with the State Land Trust where there, you know, we potentially could provide more legal access to that land as time goes on, whether that's by trails or some of these lands that are shut off for hunting or whatever it may be.
Yeah, and there's actually a fair amount of state land trust land here in the San Luis Valley.
That's correct. Yep, a huge amount. And so it's exciting. It's a really exciting project, both from partner standpoints, both with the partnership with Sawatch County. I really appreciate their support there. And we're excited to get it off the ground and see it running and yeah, and then hopefully have some revenue that pulls back into some of our projects throughout the San Luis Valley. You know, and more than anything, you know, and you know, with Patrick's leadership with the Great Outdoors Action Team, like what we really, really want to do is put recreational infrastructure in communities, right? And it's just great. Like, we all love going to the mountains and everything, but on a day-to-day basis, sometimes that's really hard. And so we do. We want open space directly in our communities that have trail access so people can go walk their dogs, so their kids can ride bikes, they can go for a walk in the morning or a run or whatever it may be. And that's really, you know, if we could do anything on a day-to-day basis, it would be buy open space, put trails and outdoor resources in that open space for San Luis Valley communities. That's what we want to do. And so this Tin Can Camp, in a way, is a push for us to be able to recognize that mission more and more.
Well, it's been a busy year for you guys at SLV Go.
Always is.
and lots of accomplishments. I mean, the list, all our listeners are going to hear about all the great things that have been going on.
Yeah, excited about it all. I would say too that we are almost booked up for 2024 for the goats, which is incredible. Like, we've never been in that place before. And we actually have been working on 2025 ask for applications. We're thinking that far out. But y'all, please always feel free to, first of all, open invitation for the Regional Partnership Initiative work. Like, want people to come and be a part of that work. It's the fourth Thursday of the month, 3 o'clock.
Yeah, and there's usually a web component to that, so you don't have to be physically away from your house or wherever you happen to work.
Yep, exactly. And you can always reach us at SLV Great Outdoors at slvgo.com, or you can look us up on the website and email either any one of us, and we can get you in. If it's not the right person, we'll get you in touch with the right person, no problem.
Great. Well, I think that brings us up to date on the happenings, and we look forward to hearing more in the spring, especially about the Tin Can Camp once it opens and see what kind of use you get for it.
And yep.
It'll be exciting.
Hopefully it'll be a slow opening as we move to summer.
Well, the wintertime is a great place. I mean, it's a great time to get outdoors.
Absolutely. Yep. So it's nice to have a warm place to come back to.
It is. Yep. Well, thanks, Mick. We've been talking with Mick Daniel, the Executive Director of San Luis Valley Great Outdoors. We'll be right back after a brief message from our sponsors. You're listening to The Outdoor Citizen.
Did you know Monte Vista has more to offer than just gorgeous mountain views? It has a heart bigger than the Culebra Peak. This year alone, with the help of the Lohr Foundation, Monte Vista locals led over 50 community projects that helped make life in Monte Vista even better. Whether it was expanding the Connor Animal Shelter or launching a student-run t-shirt shop, the Lohr Foundation was thrilled to support these efforts and wants to do even more. If you or your community group need funding for a project that can enhance life in Monte Vista, contact Yvette Atencio at ivette@lorfoundation.org. Let's keep working toward a better Monte Vista.
Welcome back to The Outdoor Citizen. We're going to give you some upcoming outdoor events. Here's a look at some events in December. The December Forest Specialist Series is all about fish. December 13th at 5 p.m., you can join the Rio Grande National Forest in their newest entry into the series. This month's specialist is Sandra Wagner, a local author and retired chemist and professor. In fact, Sandy was one of my students when I taught at the University of North Dakota, lo these many years ago. She'll be presenting a program on an Upper Rio Grande fish story, historical fish stories from the Upper Rio Grande. And some of the books that she has written are really interesting. She's got great historical perspective and background. So you can learn more about the early days of commercial aquaculture and the development of recreational fishing in the Upper Rio Grande area. You can find the link to the Zoom meeting on the Rio Grande National Forest website or their Facebook page. Later in December, Colorado Parks and Wildlife is hosting hunter education classes. Those will be December 16th and 17th at the Sky High Complex in Monte Vista. reach out to District Wildlife Manager Tyler Cerny, 719-850-6363 to enroll. Remember, the Valley Calendar is the most comprehensive listing of events from across the San Luis Valley. Be sure to check it out and stay up to date at alamosacitizen.com. And now it's time for some additional correspondent reports and winter conditions. On the Outdoor Citizen, we invite all the outdoor recreationists and nature enjoyers to be a part of our ever-changing team of outdoor field correspondents. You don't have to report the news, just tell us about your adventures, big or small, in the San Luis Valley's great outdoors. Here's our latest outdoor field report from Chris Lopez, who's still dreaming and hoping for a white Christmas.
Hey Marty, I'm out on the trails on the Rio Grande, around the riparian park here in Alamosa. No winds, amazing weather, 45 degrees, stretching into 50. Looking like that all this week into next week. National Weather Service Marty's forecasting temperatures 10 to 15 degrees above normal here in early December as we stretch into the month. No precipitation expected here in the lower elevations. Gonna get some occasional high wind, particularly in the Sawatch area this weekend. Still holding out hope for a white Christmas though. This is my field report, Marty.
Whether you're walking or biking the local trails or climbing mountains, hunting and fishing, or just sitting in your backyard, it's easy to be an outdoor field correspondent. All you have to do is record an audio file on your phone and send it to us. We would love to see a photo or video along with it too. You can email info@alamosacitizen.com or text the audio file and photo to 720-891-6759 with a brief description and your name for credit. While the San Luis Valley is dry in the lower elevations, it doesn't mean Colorado isn't getting its share of December snow. Snowpack levels across the state are currently at 100% of normal. The deepest snowpack in Colorado was last observed at Tower with a snowpack depth of 44 inches, about 122% of normal when compared to its 36-inch average depth for this time of year. Berthoud Summit, perched at an elevation of 11,300 feet, is currently experiencing some of the coldest temperatures in Colorado, with air temps last recorded at minus 31 degrees. Wolf Creek has received 2 inches of snow melt over the past 24 hours. It has a total snowpack of 21 inches at the summit. That observed snowpack is 72% of normal, low for this time of year. Monarch Mountain is opening for the season on December 6th with a reported base of 29 inches and more snow likely this weekend. Taos Mountain is also open for the season with a base depth of 18 inches. With respect to avalanches, according to the Colorado Avalanche Information Center, avalanche danger in the southern San Juans is considerable near and above tree line. You can trigger an avalanche large enough to bury you on northerly and east-facing slopes near and above tree line. These avalanches can be triggered from far away, so avoid traveling on or under slopes steeper than about 30 degrees. Find safer travel options by sticking to south-facing or below tree-line slopes with no weak snow near the ground. Avalanche danger in the northern San Juans and the Sangre de Cristo ranges is moderate above tree-line. You could trigger an avalanche above tree-line that can break wide across the slope. Most triggered avalanches will be small, but could still knock you over and take you for a rocky, dangerous ride down the slope. Reduce your risk of triggering a slide by avoiding upper elevation north, northeast, and east-facing slopes. Next, we have some news from outside. SLV Go has released two promotional videos showcasing the dark skies of the San Luis Valley. Danny Robin, who is leading the efforts for an international dark sky designation, tells us that the videos reveal our connection to the night sky as humanity's longest shared heritage, the value we place on a naturally dark sky, and about our effort to preserve the night sky and establish the Sangre de Cristo International Dark Sky Reserve. You can view the videos on the SLV Go YouTube channel or on alamosacitizen.com. Gray wolves are taking one step closer to making their way to Colorado. Starting December 8, the official Rule 10J takes effect. Colorado Parks and Wildlife can now begin to implement the management plan. This date is not the release date for wolves to be officially released into the state. The process for actual transportation does not have an official date. Oregon Parks and Wildlife entered into a formal agreement with CPW that finally solved the puzzle of where Colorado would receive its wolves for the state-ordered and voter-approved but experimental reintroduction effort. The wolves will be dropped off in three counties west of the Continental Divide: Grand, Summit, and Eagle counties. You can visit the CPW website to learn more about how to keep yourself safe in the event of an interaction with wolves and to learn more about the reintroduction effort. Well, that brings us to the end of another Outdoor Citizen podcast. We hope you enjoyed listening in. We want to once again thank Don Richmond for the music that you're hearing and Daniel Boyes for the bird sounds that you hear. We'll be back in a couple of weeks with representatives from the San Juan Nordic Association, the San Juan Nordic Club. And until the next time, stay warm and we'll see you in the outdoors.